I'm sure that I've told you before that I love listening to the radio comedy, and one series I particularly enjoy is Dad's Army. Yes, I know it was a TV show, but it was also recorded for radio, and it's sometimes rebroadcast by the BBC on Radio 7. If you know the show, you'll know that it's full of beautifully written, very memorable characters. But perhaps the character which sticks in the mind the most is Corporal Jones, played by Clive Dunn, with his memorable catchphrases, including the catchphrase, "Don't panic!" That was a phrase picked up by the science fiction writer Douglas Adams in his radio show, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Don't panic! And when it later was transformed to television and to film, that appeared on the screen in huge letters. Don't panic. Disaster movies often have a don't panic scene. The hero or the heroines trying to organise the others to escape the oncoming disaster. But somebody loses his or her head and starts screaming about how they're all going to die. Don't panic, shouts the one in charge, often slapping the panicky one. Now, generally speaking, it's probably good advice. Not the slapping part, but don't panic. Don't let fear paralyse you so that you do nothing. Don't let fear make you overreact so that you do lots of unhelpful things. For if you stay focused on the problem and don't panic, then things go better. Of course, it's bad advice to stay too calm or too unruffled when there's a disaster shaping up. When we were on holiday, we saw several road signs on these American highways asking the question, "Do you have your hurricane pack?" And as I read these signs again and again and again, I started to get a bit worried because we didn't have a hurricane pack. And then that fear was exacerbated by the other signs pointing out the hurricane evacuation routes. And we wondered, having not seen the newspapers or watched television, we wondered if we'd missed something. I wonder how many people in coastal regions end up dead because they do not take hurricane warnings seriously. Well, here in John 6, which we've been reading this morning, we have John's versions of paired miracles. Miracles of the feeding of the multitude and the water walking. And both these miracles have a crisis at their centre. And to see these episodes as John did, we turn first to a close reading of the story, being careful not to import details from the other Gospels. The first crisis, the first don't panic incident, is that there are too many mouths and not enough bread. John's introduction to chapter 6 in the first four verses gives us almost too many thematic threads for these stories. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs he had performed on the sick. Then Jesus went up the mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near. So firstly, from that brief introduction, we see that Jesus is near the Sea of Galilee, the large lake that was so important to the economy of that region in Jesus' day. But on the other side of the lake was Capernaum, somewhere on the eastern shore, and it was Capernaum that was their home base. Secondly, Jesus has been healing the sick, and so crowds and crowds of people are following him for that reason. And third, Jesus takes a seat on a mountain. That was a very traditional beginning for a story about a prophet preaching, or teaching, or revealing God's message. And then finally, in these first four verses, John tells us that the Passover is close. He tells us that so that we have the associations of God's miraculous deliverance of Israel from Egypt, of the Passover meal celebrated by all Israel, and of God's equally miraculous preservation of Israel as they crossed the desert to the Promised Land. So the crowds approach, and Jesus rather than teaching them, immediately asks one of the disciples how he and they could provide bread for the people. Philip replies, "It would cost too much." But then Andrew suggests that there are loaves and fish which the boy has. Too many people, not enough resources. We can't do anything. I wonder if that sounds familiar. Today we might say there are too many homeless or too many addicted to drugs or alcohol. There are too many stuck at home, too many unemployed for our congregation to make a dent, and that's just here in Dunfermline. And if you were to add on the whole world, then the problems are just too big. Incessant wars, corruption, genocide, diseases. And if we let these things weigh on our mind for too long, then we'd go crazy. It's much better not to think about it very much. Well, we know what happens next in the gospel. Jesus instructs the disciples to tell the people to sit down. And Jesus hands over the provisions for the disciples to distribute. And then the disciples again are involved in gathering up the remains. Jesus is the host for this meal, in other words. The people have followed him because they've seen what he can do for others. And now he invites them to be his guests for dinner. His disciples facilitate, but Jesus gives the increase. I wonder if that sounds familiar. Because we all know how this works. You've had plenty of experience of that in your own homes and as part of this congregation, when you've been certain that there were not enough resources to meet the need. But working together and asking God to bless what you have, you've been surprised at how things turned out. Somebody stepped forward with the expertise or the provisions or the energy you needed, and when it was over, everyone was satisfied. Don't send the needy away because the depth of their need makes you panic. The Bible tells us Jesus is with you and will bless what you have, and your brothers and sisters are with you, and they will help you hold the baskets. So that's the first crisis. Too many mouths, not enough food. Well, the next crisis is something like this. I don't like that solution. I don't like the solution to the first crisis. You see, the people impressed by Jesus' miracle move quickly from, this is the prophet, this is the Moses-type deliverer who Moses promised would arise. They move quickly from that to, let's crown him, let's make him rule us permanently. But the gospel tells us that Jesus won't be manipulated or controlled by needs or by the needy. He gives himself freely, he gives himself compassionately, but he won't be anyone else's pawn. Again, there's no panic. He simply withdraws, going back to the mountain. And in his absence, the disciples decide to go home. So they get into their boat and they cast off. I find that interesting. As John describes things, it's their decision, not Jesus' command. And clearly they intended to leave without him. I wonder, are they spooked by the power of the miracle or by the zeal of the crowd's reaction? Or have they concluded from Jesus' absence that they are now on their own? Whatever they're thinking, off they go, rowing towards Capernaum, towards their homes and their families. And the storm comes up. But in John's version of this storm, it seems unremarkable. What gives the disciples the willies is Jesus' appearance on the lake, walking towards them after they're already several miles out from the shore. Picture the storm. It's not a crisis for fishermen who take their living from the lake, but it probably focuses their attention. And then, walking out there in the wind and the waves is Jesus. Now, if they felt abandoned or confused before, Now they feel just plain terrified at something that's completely beyond their experience or their understanding. "It is I," says the voice. "Don't be afraid. It's me. Don't panic." And then, hearing that, they wanted to take him into the boat. I wonder if you see what that last bit implies. When they first saw Jesus out there, they mostly wanted to run. I wonder if that sounds familiar. Because the Jesus who wants me to believe we can feed a multitude with 5 loaves and 2 fish is not a comfortable companion. That Jesus would tell us to open our doors to the poor and to the sick, to lay down our weapons, and to love our enemies, and to trust him to make it all work. And because Jesus refuses to be manipulated, we can't predict how he'll make it work, or when he will multiply the little we have. And that's scary. Sometimes it feels like the real crisis is not the world outside, but rather it's the decision to let Jesus into our boat and turn the show over to him. Don't panic. Jesus won't tip you over into the raging storm. Jesus won't leave you without support. But Jesus won't be controlled. And since he knows best how to fix things, that's a blessing. It is I. Don't be afraid. It's me. Don't panic. And that is the gospel. Amen.